tiger!
Ora, ora.
Hello, I'm Hanea Ahu, bringing you The Week in Parliament with Tom Fruin and Rhys Lyon. 1 week to go before we have a replacement for that empty seat in the chamber, formerly held by Nationals' Mike Sabin. Assuming there's a clear winner in Saturday's by-election, we'll know by this time next week who will restore Parliament to its full complement of 121 MPs. It's been down to 120 since Mr. Sabin resigned at the end of January, creating the potential for votes in the chamber to result in dead heats of 60 for the opposition parties combined and 60 for National, plus the ACT party's David Seymour. And there were some photo finishes last week, as Tom Fruin reports.
A fascinating week as voting on members' bills again split the House right down the middle. The potential for votes to dead heat at 60-60 was created by the resignation of Nationals' Northland MP Mike Sabin. That vacancy, to be filled by the winner of next Saturday's by-election, reduced the overall number of seats in the House to 120. The National Party, down by 1 to 59 seats, now needs two more votes from its support parties, United Future, ACT and the Murray Party, for a bare majority of 61 that's needed to pass a bill or advance it to the next stage. 60 is not enough, so a dead heat is a win for the status quo. It meant defeat for Sue Moroney's paid parental leave bill on the last Members' Day on Wednesday, February the 25th. Two sitting weeks later, voting on not one but two members' bills ended in a dead heat. Two more were defeated by the narrowest of margins, 61 to 59, and one sailed through without the need for a vote. There was a bill providing clothing allowances for orphans and unsupported children. It had already been to a select committee, and with the support of all parties, it flew through its second reading. Introduced in December 2012, it's in the name of the New Zealand First Party's deputy leader, Tracy Martin, who now has two bills up for debate after Thursday's ballot. Drawn from a total of 68 draft bills, hers would repeal the legislation that carries the government's deal, extending Sky City's gambling rights in return for construction of a convention centre in Auckland. The ballot was required to fill the empty slots created by the defeat of four bills, which failed to survive their first readings on Wednesday night. The first would have provided for breakfast and lunch programs in schools. It was in the name of Greens co-leader Matiria Touré, who laid the blame for the bill's defeat directly across the chamber.
I do remain so deeply disappointed in National that they will not support it to select committee. Tonight, hungry children are being failed by 59 National MPs.
Who were joined by United Future's Peter Dunn and the ACT Party's David Seymour, giving them 61 votes to defeat the 59 of all other parties. The same arithmetic led to the same fate for the Electronic Data Safety Bill from Labour's communications spokeswoman Claire Curran, whose appeal for Peter Dunn's vote fell on deaf ears.
Because the bill was drawn from the ballot before work in late 2012, that address the very issues the bill seeks to address and which therefore make the bill utterly redundant.
After withholding his support for Claire Curran's bill, Peter Dunn then crossed the floor for the vote on another food and schools bill from Labour's David Shearer.
Could I just thank the parties that have agreed to support this bill? The Green Party, the New Zealand First Party, the Māori Party and United Future Party.
Their 60 votes were matched by the 60 of National and ACT, who then combined to kill off the Healthy Homes Guarantee Bill from Labour's Phil Twyford.
They are happy to stand on the side of slum landlords and against ordinary New Zealanders who want their kids to grow up in warm, dry homes.
Having cut four members' bills off at the pass on Wednesday, the government took all of Tuesday to push its bill, reducing MPs' pay rise through all its stages under urgency, a concern for Labour's chief whip, Chris Hipkins.
We have particular reservations about pushing this bill through all stages under urgency without any kind of proper process around it. The risk of getting it wrong is high in doing that. The risk that we will need to come back and fix it again is high. But also, the independence of the Remuneration Authority is compromised in the way this bill has been introduced and the way it is being pushed through.
Labour's Chris Hipkins, whose party nevertheless joined all others except the Greens in passing the Remuneration Authority brackets Members of Parliament Remuneration close brackets Amendment Bill through all its stages. ending just before the 10 p.m. adjournment on Tuesday night in a vote of 106-14. So that was one government bill passed this week, although the tally would have looked much better had Thursday's third reading debate on an omnibus measure containing 34 different bills not been delayed after the Speaker, David Carter, accepted a request for a snap debate on the Independent Police Conduct Authority's report on the Roastbusters case.
In order for an urgent debate to be held, there must be a particular case of recent occurrence involving ministerial responsibility. This matter has been the subject of two earlier applications, those related to the decision not to prosecute, for which there is no ministerial responsibility. However, at the time I indicated that if the Independent Police Complaints Authority report was to reveal a significant development, the matter may warrant the setting aside of the business of the House. Having again considered the matter and having read the report today, I have determined that the House should debate this matter. It is of critical importance that the public have confidence in the ability of the police to investigate.
The debate was launched by Labor's Justice Spokeswoman Jacinda Ardern.
Mr. Speaker, it's devastating to say that there is only one way to describe the report that was released by the Independent Police Conduct Authority at midday today, and that word is damning.
Jacinda Ardern was especially critical of the way the police responded to the rape allegations.
The police should have knocked on those young men's door. Regardless if they were there to put handcuffs on them, they should have questioned them on their behaviour. They should have told their family about what was going on. They should have done everything in their power to stop further victims from being put through the situation that these seven young women were, simply by confronting their behaviour. And that didn't happen.
Jacinda Ardern also had questions for the Minister of Police, Michael Woodhouse, who said the IPCA's report had caused him concern.
The report highlights a failure by police to adequately investigate and a failure to uphold the level of policing that the New Zealand public expect. I've sought and received an assurance that Commissioner Bush is taking this report and its findings very seriously.
Other contributions included one from Michael Woodhouse's predecessor, Anne Tolley.
If there's one thing that we all learn out of this, from the police perspective, from CIF perspective, and from us as politicians, is that we have to give that credence to that thought that someone has to take responsibility, even if a prosecution can't take place.
And Tolley's comment about taking responsibility drew a tart response from Labor spokeswoman on women's affairs, Sue Moroney.
The reason that we are debating this issue in the House at all today is because the Speaker has deemed that there is ministerial responsibility for what has occurred. And you'd never know it listening to the speeches from the National Party that actually there is ministerial responsibility on this issue, and they need to take it an awful lot more seriously, because so far their contributions have all been about what the police should have done, and the police this and the police that, and CIFs this and CIFs that. Ministers, take some responsibility, because until that happens, we will not crack this one. We will not crack this one.
Labor's Sue Moroney speaking in Thursday's urgent debate on the Independent Police Conduct Authority report on the Roastbusters case. And there was also a short debate on Tuesday, prompted by this motion from the Prime Minister, John Key.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House express its support for the people and government of Vanuatu and other Pacific neighbours affected by Cyclone Pam.
Mr. Key later faced this question from Greens co-leader Russell Norman.
Does he accept the findings of the latest report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which stated that current climate change projections mean there will be a likely increase in both global mean tropical cyclone maximum wind speeds and precipitation rates, or to put it in plain English, that climate change leads to more intense and stronger cyclones?
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I think the balance of scientific opinion would support the view that climate change can lead to greater climatic conditions like cyclones. But I would just caution the member that there is no evidence to support that Cyclone Pam is a consequence of climate change. It's simply mere speculation that he would suggest it is if he is doing that.
And the decision of Mr. Key's government to send New Zealand troops to Iraq was under scrutiny in one of the committee rooms, as Rhys Lyon reports.
On Thursday, Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Trade officials faced some tough questions from opposition members when they fronted up to the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee for an annual review. Labour's Phil Goff had questions about the government's decision to commit military personnel to Iraq.
There have been quite significant revelations in recent days on gross violations of human rights by Iraqi forces, the Iraqi army, including their special forces. Will that influence our decision to continue to go ahead with the deployment of New Zealand troops? Because if we're sending New Zealand troops to prevent atrocities, and yet the people being trained by the West are creating the atrocities, that seems to be a contradiction in purpose.
Replying to that was Ministry of Foreign Affairs Deputy Secretary of Multilateral and Legal Affairs, Gerard van Boheman.
That's a decision ultimately for ministers to make. Of course, we are following events in Iraq very closely, including looking into those reports and understanding how they work. I would note that it's not an assumption I would make that those particular troops have been trained and armed by the United States, because there are a bunch of militias involved, but I could be wrong about that.
Mr. Goff pointed to evidence that he said backed up his assertions.
We have the State Department Bureau of Democracy, Human Rights and Labour issuing a report saying the Iraqi troops, which are trained and armed by the US, have been guilty of torturing and killing detainees. That's the US State Department that's saying that. It's, and the United Nations High Commissioner on Human Rights saying that while they condemned ISIS, the Iraqi security forces are also committing war crimes. So here we have the State Department and the United Nations both saying that the people that we are going to train are guilty of the violations of human rights that are supposedly we're sending them there to stop. Isn't that a contradiction?
That's a concern.
What advice would you give the government, given those revelations about the appropriateness of continuing the deployment?
I would be giving the government appropriate advice to take careful consideration into this and to consult our other colleagues and allies involved in this exercise.
Ministry of Foreign Affairs Deputy Secretary of Multilateral and Legal Affairs, Gerard van Boheman. And also on Thursday, 10-year-old Sean Roberts and his 9-year-old brother Cody presented their petition calling for mandatory driving tests for foreign drivers to the Transport and Industrial Relations Committee. The motivation for their petition was the death of their father Grant in a car crash involving a foreign driver in 2012. They were supported at the committee meeting by their mother, Mel Pipson, who welcomed the rental car industry's introduction of a voluntary code of conduct around foreign drivers.
We'd like to see, along with that code of practice, some competency test. And not a long one, you know, just some sort of competency that they understand signs and rules and things, even if it's only 10 minutes, some competency test. And we would like to ask that the government would regulate that.
Mel Pipson said their petition was intended to benefit foreign drivers too.
We want them to come here, you know, we want to have it, the tourists in our country, but we want to make sure that they are safe while they're here as well and return home to their families.
Mel Pipson speaking to the Transport and Industrial Relations Committee. All up, there were 15 committee meetings held during the week.
That report from Rhys Lyon. Back in the chamber, the Northland by-election continued to fan the flames on both sides of the chamber, with questions about spending on Northland's bridges inspiring this refrain from Transport Minister Simon Bridges.
On this side of the House, we can make political commitments and keep them, unlike on that side of the House. And on this side of the House, we've got a strong voice standing for us, and on his side of the House, his candidate's not even allowed to talk, let alone advocate for policies. But, Mr Speaker, be very clear. On this side of the House, we actually like the people of Northland. We go up and talk to them. Because on this side of the House, Mr Speaker, we actually go out.
Next day, it was the turn of the Minister for Economic Development, Stephen Joyce, and he took this swipe at the New Zealand First Party leader and Northland by-election candidate, Winston Peters, when answering a question from one of Mr Peters' list MPs, Dennis O'Rourke.
In case he doesn't know it, his leader is wandering around Northland saying he's in favour of doing things for Northland.
If Mr Peters was wandering around Northland, he was not in the House, and although not forbidden, drawing attention to the absence of other members is not the done thing, and drew this complaint from New Zealand First's Ron Mark.
And that member is out of order.
No, order, order. There is no standing order which says you cannot refer to the absence of House. It's been a long-term convention in this House, and I accept the points making. It is unhelpful and will lead to disorder if members do refer to the absence of any member.
Mr Carter's ruling drew an apparently contrite acknowledgement from Mr Joyce's senior colleague and leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee.
Mr Speaker, it was incorrect for Minister Joyce to refer the Right Honourable Mr Peters as wandering around Northland. He's in fact flying around the helicopter.
Order, order.
Next day, Mr Brownlee's eagerness to answer a question about Northland nearly caused a meltdown in the Speaker's chair.
Mr Speaker.
Order.
No more
order,
than I can...
Order. I have not yet called the member. Mr Brownlee will sit down when I rise to my feet. That behaviour creates disorder.
Now, in more orderly fashion, here's Mr Brownlee with his weekly business statement.
Mr Speaker, when the House resumes on Tuesday the 24th of March, the Government will look to progress the Taxation, KiwiSaver, Homestart and Remedial Matters Bill, the New Zealand Superannuation and Retirement Income Amendment Bill and a number of other bills on the order paper.
The Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee, with a preview of the Government's to-do list for this week. And among those other bills that he mentioned is likely to be an omnibus measure amending more than 30 existing laws.
34, in fact, that's the number of bills split out of the Statutes Amendment Bill No. 4 at the end of its committee stage last Thursday, ready to go through their third and final reading together this week. Also known as an omnibus bill, it's a vehicle for minor and non-contentious amendments to existing legislation, as explained during Thursday's debate by Labor's Shadow Attorney-General David Parker.
We don't have many constitutional provisions in New Zealand against the change of legislation. We only have one House of Parliament. We don't have all of our constitutional rules written down in one place in a written constitution, and we don't give the courts.
It's true, it's true.
And we don't give the courts the power under the Bill of Rights to strike down parliamentary legislation. And actually, I agree with those settings. I don't think we should give the courts the power to strike down legislation. But what it does mean is that we have to take great care that we don't misuse the very broad powers that we have in this Parliament to change the laws quite quickly. Some really good, reasons for us having those powers. We don't get stymied like they find themselves in the United States now, where they've got a deadlock against meaningful change. It means that if we as a country want to move on things like climate change, actually this Parliament can do it. It's very hard for them to do that in the United States, and it's good that we can make those changes, but it does mean that we've got to be careful that we don't go too far and one piece of legislation effectively give control or big change over great big swathes of the economy or society, as happened in the old Economic Stabilisation Act, where regulation-making powers were effectively conferred upon the government for just about everything. So the standing orders now say that omnibus bills that change legislation in a lot of spheres are not generally allowed. So if the government wants to change something relating to tax laws, they have to bring forward a tax bill. If they want to change something around the criminal code, they have to bring a criminal piece of legislation. And if they want to do something about the environment, they need an environmental bill. Where there's crossover between environment and economy, they can touch those things in the same bill, as they ought to and often don't. But we shouldn't be changing the Local Government Act and the Land Transport Act and the Births, Deaths and Marriages Act in the same act unless the things that are being done are of minor effect. And that is the one exception that we have to omnibus bills in this House. And so this is that exception. The Statutes Amendment Bill, or as we now have the list of bills that are now before us now that it has been split following the committee stage into separate bills, and I could take the rest of my 10-minute time up by just listing the various acts that we are now considering in this bill. This is the one exception, and it's a proper exception, and we agree it's all non-contentious.
Labor's Shadow Attorney-General David Parker speaking in the debate on the Statutes Amendment Bill No. 4 on Thursday.
Thanks, Tom. Now, before we go any further, here's the mystery voice.
The Week in Parliament. Mystery voice.
This phenomenon of fiscal drag is just another description for an increase in effective tax rates.
Who is the mystery voice and what are they talking about? Here it is again.
This phenomenon of fiscal drag is just another description for an increase in effective tax rates.
I'll be back with the identity of the mystery voice later in the program. But now here's Rish Lyon to explain how a motion in support of Pacific Islands hit by Cyclone Pam led to some interesting questions for the Prime Minister.
Tributes to island nations affected by Cyclone Pam began with party leaders backing the Prime Minister's motion, expressing support for Pacific neighbours devastated by the cyclone.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House express its support for the people and government of Vanuatu and other Pacific neighbours affected by Cyclone Pam.
Mr. Key's assurance that New Zealand would be doing everything possible to help the relief and recovery effort was backed by opposition leader Andrew Little.
To the people of Vanuatu, this has been a very hard time for you. And in this hard time, we in Labour, we in this Parliament, we in New Zealand stand with you in your loss, but also stand with you as you help to rebuild and recover.
Among other party leaders, United Futures' Peter Dunn found food for thought.
Mr. Speaker, we live in a very vulnerable part of the world climatically. One of the other speakers has already made reference to that. And while I don't want to indulge in the politics of the matter on an occasion like this, I think it is fair to observe that these circumstances do drive us to reflect upon causes, do drive us to reflect upon what we can do to help island states in such situations, to help our fellow Pacific neighbours get through these terrible tragedies.
The other speaker that Peter Dunn mentioned was Greens co-leader Russell Norman, who didn't share United Futures' reluctance to indulge in politics when it was his turn to question the Prime Minister.
Does he accept the findings of the latest report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which stated that current climate change projections mean there will be a likely increase in both global mean tropical cyclone maximum wind speeds and precipitation rates, or to put it in plain English, that climate change leads to more intense and stronger cyclones?
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I think the balance of scientific opinion would support the view that climate change can lead to greater climatic conditions like cyclones. But I would just caution the member that there is no evidence to support that Cyclone Pam is a consequence of climate change. It's simply mere speculation. He would suggest it is if he is doing that.
The Prime Minister, though, would not accept Russell Norman's claims about New Zealand's contribution to global warming.
In light of the fact that New Zealand's net greenhouse gas emissions have increased by 20% since the Prime Minister has been in office, which is a simple fact, he think that his government has been a good Pacific neighbour and a responsible international citizen?
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I think the member is being extremely selective with the truth, and his facts are incorrect.
Unsatisfied with that response, Mr. Norman tried again.
Does he believe that New Zealand has been a good Pacific neighbour and a responsible international citizen in light of the fact that since he has been Prime Minister of New Zealand, New Zealand's net greenhouse gas emissions have increased by 20% according to the statistics from his government?
Honourable Prime Minister.
In terms of the latter part of the question, I reject the member's suggestion. In terms of the former part of the question, actually New Zealand's been a very good Pacific neighbour. The member may remember that it was under the leadership of a national-led government that we hosted the Renewable Energy Conference here in New Zealand, where we've been investing heavily in ensuring that Pacific neighbours actually are no longer reliant on the importation of fossil fuels, and that over time they'll have a variety of options, but most likely to be solar and wind available to them to stop the importation. New Zealand's been doing the same things for instance, down in Antarctica. So, Mr. Speaker, New Zealand's been investing extremely heavily in research when it comes to agriculture. And, in fact, the government is on track not only to meet its 2008 to 2012 commitment to reduce net emissions to the 1990 levels, but we're actually on track to achieve the objective of reducing emissions further to a minimum of -5%. And, yes, we are.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, Dr. Russell Norman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In light of that answer, is he surprised then to find that Ministry for the Environment, in their official projections, show that New Zealand's net greenhouse gas emissions will increase by 48% in just 10 years, according to the report from his own government?
Speaker.
Right Honourable Prime
Speaker,
Minister.
That's assuming no other action. It's one of the reasons why the government's been investing heavily. I mean, the member is aware of the fact that over half of New Zealand's emissions come from agriculture. If the member's suggesting that New Zealand destocks and shoots animals and reduces its world food supply, then he's welcome to do that. But that is one of his more daft ideas, but at least it would have some idea about the economy, because any of the people who want to replace him don't even know what the cash rate is.
That's not going to help the order of the House.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question, Dr. Russell Norman.
Is he even aware of the comments from the President of Kiribati, Enote Tong, who said of climate change and its effect on the Pacific yesterday that it is, quote, a catastrophe that impinges on our rights and on our survival into the future? And will he take action to actually reduce New Zealand's emissions in light of those comments?
Right Honourable Prime Minister.
I'm well and truly aware of the President of Kiribati's comments. I've had numerous discussions and been involved in numerous meetings with him. And, Mr Speaker, the government can be proud of the actions it's taking when it comes to climate change.
Prime Minister John Key. And the cyclone threw up more questions on Thursday from New Zealand First's Ron Mark, who took a completely different tack and was answered on the Prime Minister's behalf by Defence Minister Gerry Brownlee.
My question is to the Prime Minister and asks, does he stand by his statement in relation to Cyclone Pam? Quote, we will continue to do all we can to help our Pacific Island neighbours.
The Honourable Gerry Brownlee.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Prime Minister, yes.
Supplementary question, Ron Mark.
To the Prime Minister, why is Garden City Helicopters installing extra fuel tanks to fly from Christchurch to Vanuatu when multi-role vessel HMNZS Canterbury, capable of embarking two NH90 helicopters and which has hospital facilities, is currently alongside in Devonport?
Honourable Gerry Brownlee.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Prime Minister, this afternoon the Minister of Defence and the Minister of Foreign Affairs have announced that Canterbury is being deployed to Vanuatu. It will be carrying Sea Sprite helicopters. NH90s, purchased by a previous government, are unsuitable for the work required in Vanuatu. Canterbury will have quite a considerable amount of facility on it that will be useful. I point out to the House that we are working with the Vanuatu government and responding to their requests. This won't be something that's over in a short period of time. There will be ongoing requirements for us to help them.
So, order. Supplementary question, Ron Mark.
Thank you to the Minister. Why, given that this is only the second Category 5 cyclone to make landfall in modern times, is our urban search and rescue team, who received international accreditation with distinction last week, not been deployed?
Honourable Gerry Brownlee, on behalf of the Prime Minister.
On behalf of the Prime Minister, we, of course, are responding to the requirements or the requests of the Vanuatu government. The Minister of Defence, in fact, spoke to the President of Vanuatu last Saturday and assured him that we would be there to help them, indicated that the cash sums that the government was making available and invited them to make requests of us, which we are answering as they are made.
Supplementary question, Ron Mark.
To the Prime Minister, does he believe we are organised and equipped well enough to respond swiftly to natural disasters here and abroad, when 40% of our tactical airlifters suffered equipment failures, when our new NH90 helicopters aren't equipped with automated folding blades, and when Canterbury is still tied up in Devonport and USAR teams are still awaiting an order to deploy, having been sat on standby for days now?
Honourable Gerry Brownlee, on behalf of the Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, on behalf of the Prime Minister, we are working with the Vanuatu government and responding to the requests that they make. The mere fact that we have those facilities and capabilities on standby indicates our willingness to participate. Mr Speaker, Vanuatu is a sovereign government and has every right to make the call on us in their own time. What I would say with regards to the military equipment, yes, I do have concerns about the state of the air transport capability, but I notice there's only one standout party in Parliament who's opposed to us even looking at replacements at the present time.
Defence Minister Gerry Brownlee speaking on behalf of Prime Minister John Key.
That report from Rhys Lyon. Now back to the Mystery Voice.
The Week in Parliament. Mystery Voice.
This phenomenon of fiscal drag is just another description for an increase in effective tax rates.
And the mystery voice is that of David Seymour, the ACT Party's member for Epsom, who last week supplied the one vote the government needed to block members' bills from going on to their next stage. More information and a podcast of this program on our webpage, Parliament Today or oneword.co.nz. I'm Hinea Ahu and I'll be back with Tom Fruin and Rhys Lyon and another report from Parliament at the same time next week.